Hi, my name is Dan. You're listening to the Warm Blanket Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Warm Blanket Podcast, where we embark on a journey to see what makes us feel good about Star Trek, where our love comes from, and what it means for us. In short, what is our warm blanket? My name is Gary, I'm your host, and I'm very honored to welcome here my special guest, Dan, today, who is a fantastic artist recreating art from popular sci-fi shows like Doctor Who, Star Wars, Firefly, and Star Trek, just to mention a few. He's a humble, kind, and very talented Trekkie, and I'm very fortunate to have him on the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a very warm welcome to the one and only Mr. Dan Waltz. How are you today, sir?
I am doing well. How are you?
Very good as well. It's a very rainy day here in Scotland. How about there in the heart of US?
in the heartland, it's, you know, cloudy, gray, and humid. So just another Minnesota summer day.
That's awesome. Well, I guess Sunday, lots of time to spend indoors, which is good. Makes a good excuse to make some art, is it?
yeah. I don't think I've. So I will go outside occasionally, right? Like I exercise every day, but I have not gone like in public in months. Like, just not. I'm not gonna do it. Like, it is not safe enough.
It's not. It's not at all. Especially people not wearing masks at the moment, but. Yeah, not going to go into that way because that's a different podcast for a different reason.
It is a different podcast, yes.
So, you're an artist, and I come across with your art, I don't remember when, but a while ago. And sure. I really love your style and the presentation that you do with, mainly with Star Trek. Of course, that's something that I love, and
sure.
Based on the amount of artworks that you did, Star Trek is one of your forte, let's just say. I can't confirm.
Yes, that is true.
So, first things first. As you know, I told you I'm a graphic designer myself, and I was just wondering, as a professional, how did you decide it, or what was the reason? Have you always wanted to be an artist?
So the short answer is yes. I have. The long answer is for a very long time, I wanted to be an artist, but it didn't seem practical, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, your family encourages you to branch out to other skills, to do other things, like, you know, do something. You can't make money with art, do something else. And then eventually, like, later on in life, you realize this is not, like, I am not happy or fulfilled doing this money-making thing. So I got back into art and kind of really sort of devoted myself to it, if that's the right word, invested mm-hmm. in it. And that's kind of where I am right now.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder, how did you develop your style in terms of, you know, you quite good with people, faces, and of course with starships, those ships that I've seen, it was just fantastic. I mean,
thank you. So that's a good question. And the short answer, I'm gonna try not to say, for whatever reason, that's one of my go-to little phrases. So I'm gonna try not to say it in answer to every one of your questions.
That's fine.
So what I will say though is that I really try to kind of let my style develop naturally without a kind of intention behind it, because I think as an artist, if you focus too much on, like, what's my style, you end up forcing it, and it doesn't, like, you'll always be in that space where you're kind of obsessed with, mm-hmm. like, is this my style or is that my style? Like, what's my style? And you'll, like, it can be paralyzing. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely been, like, inspired by, mm-hmm. like, the art of John Eaves, who I think does fabulous starship art.
John who?
John, yeah, right? But here's the thing with John Eaves, right? Is that, because there are a lot of great, like, starship artists out there, mm, right?
Yes.
But a lot of them use, like, 3D models, mm-hmm. which is fine. But John Eaves will actually, like, you know, paint, use pencils. Like, he'll do, like, traditional, like, physical media or traditional physical media facsimile kind of a thing. Like, he's painting this stuff, more or less. So, like, and that to me is kind of like, oh, you can do that. And that's kind of where that style is inspired from. Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of people, you know, it has been a much longer and more painful evolution. A lot of my older art is very, very, like, comic book inspired. Mm-hmm. And so occasionally I'll still put out pieces like this where I'll, you know, have line work and then painting and then, or line work and then colors, right? Or just line work. Mm-hmm. But I don't do a lot of line work anymore. It's kind of shifted more into, like, you know, the painting style, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term. So, like, but a lot of that started with comic books, and I think that's where a lot of my style in terms of people come from. And so now it's just transitioning into, like, that's the thing with style too, right? Is that it never, mm-hmm. it will never stop changing. Like, it'll be something different next year than it was this year.
Oh yeah, of course.
Although I still won't be able to draw feet, so, you know.
Well, I guess everyone has their, you know, weak points. I mean, I'm terrible with faces still today, and I, even though I try, it's really hard to get that image that I have in my head to sure. put it out in paper. But your comic book style, I have seen a few of your line drawings, and they are fantastic. I mean,
well, thank you.
You should be working in the industry.
Well, yeah, I do take that as a compliment. There are, like, so many factors that determine whether I think the industry is a good fit for you, mm-hmm. and vice versa, more than just drawing capabilities, I guess, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I mean, just thinking about my personal life as well, it's sometimes it's not fun being a graphic designer, for sure. Yeah, you have one client and you have 50 million variation of the same project.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and there was a time where, you know, I was really invested in the idea of making sequential art, right? So basically, like, making comic books. Like, I did this 10, 11, 12 page, this was a couple years ago, Star Wars versus Star Trek comic.
Yeah. Where the Enterprise the, and the yeah. Star Destroyer.
Yeah, and that was fun, but, like, there's so much time and work that goes into each panel and each page, and mm-hmm. I found my attention kind of, like, waning, you know? Mm-hmm. And if I can't hold my attention for 12 pages, it would be difficult to do for 20 pages, right?
Yeah.
So I realized that, like, what I've always gravitated towards, what I've always liked doing, is, like, the single illustration, right? The sort mm-hmm. of, like, single painting. It works with my attention span a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. So we touched on Star Trek, and obviously this podcast is based on Star Trek, inspired by Star Trek. Yeah. I wonder at what age or when was the time when you come across with Star Trek, and how did you get into the show?
So I was thinking about this. I first came across Star Trek when I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and I thought it was the most boring, stupid thing I'd ever seen. Because the very first episode of Star Trek that I saw was Ethics, the Next Generation episode, where Worf gets paralyzed from the neck down, right?
Mm-hmm. That's from season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I just remember thinking, like, oh my god, this is, like, they're just sitting there talking. You know, I was, like, 5 years old, and I like mm-hmm. Ninja Turtles. So, like, this was not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of held on to that erroneous notion of Star Trek till I was, like, 10 or 11. And mm-hmm. I happened across the Doomsday Machine, mm-hmm. Which to this day is still my favorite episode of the original series. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the Planet Killer, you've got all of the space action, you've got this weird, eerie, like, horror movie vibe almost. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, a fantastic episode. And from that point on, I was like, oh, this is what Star Trek can be. And I was hooked, like, from that point, which is good, because I've kind of, you know, it has been a nice companion ever since that mm-hmm. Star Trek.
What would you say, how the show influenced your life over the years, ever since you got back into it from the Doomsday Machine?
Right? It's still been a lot of years. There are a couple of ways. Probably the most profound is sort of this sense that all people have value, and that our value as individuals is sort of like multiplied when we recognize the humanity in each other, right? Mm-hmm. That like the sort of thing, you know, the that oft-cited optimistic worldview of Star mm-hmm. Trek has been incredibly formational, right? And that's kind of been, I credit that with helping me to see the world in a more inclusive and empathic way, right? Mm-hmm. It also, as a in high school and middle school, certainly contributed to my status as, you know, the nerdy kid, the outcast, etc., right? Mm-hmm. Which I think also contributes to that sense that we all have value, and that we can, because when you're kind of pushed, you know, to the outer rings of society, right, to the outside mm-hmm. of society, it makes it easier to look in and say, these are things that don't make sense. Like, you know, picking on somebody, right, in middle school because of the mm-hmm. way that they are dressed or the way that they look or something. Like, it's a lot easier to see that as ridiculous and stupid when you're not enmeshed sort of in that society, if that makes sense.
Does.
So like, and those are the two probably most profound ways, certainly mm-hmm. growing up and contributed to a broader vocabulary. They use a lot of big words in those shows. I think that answers your question.
Probably. Although I still have one question. So after after Ethics, you got back into Star Trek.
Sure.
I mean, after Doomsday Machine, you got back into Star Trek.
Yeah.
And now that you watched all of the series, right? All of them.
Yes. So, although I will admit to a certain blind spot around the animated series, like, I don't know that I've seen every episode of the animated series.
That's okay. This is now we have to finish the podcast, and you have to go and watch it, and then we come back. No, I'm just joking.
I don't know. And maybe I just chose the worst episodes of that to kind of try out, but mm-hmm. I could not get into the animated series. I did try a couple of episodes, and like, I don't know, it didn't do it for me.
So I wonder, how did you? Sorry to brag about this. How did you find Ethics rewatching it? Because I assume you rewatched it ever since.
Yes. So it's still boring. it's a fine episode. I would not rank it as one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Although I do think that there are plenty of interesting ideas in it, right? Which is something that a 5-year-old can't really appreciate. Mm-hmm. But I can certainly appreciate now. But it has moments, mm-hmm. but it's still not one of my favorite episodes.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, obviously, I mean, I'm a bit similar with Discovery and Picard in a certain extent. Not my favorite track, but I watched them. I enjoyed them. I had some good fun with both series, and I'm still hoping I'm gonna have some fun with both series. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same page as you with Ethics.
Sure.
although it's fun,
right? Yeah, and I do have to say, like, and that is not a reflection on Next Generation, because I should say that that's, you know, Next Generation is my like comfort food Trek, mm-hmm. right? That is probably the I don't know that it's my favorite, but it's the one that makes me feel the safest and warmest inside, if that makes sense.
Oh, that was the end of the podcast.
Right? Did I jump the gun?
You jumped like half an hour in the conversation. So thank you guys. Thank you. No, I'm joking. No, I still have quite a few questions for you. But yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, TNG is definitely one of those shows that became a cult from the 80s. I mean, I think the 80s were. I still believe that the 80s were the best era, 80s, 90s. Like, all those shows that came out from Knight Rider, Sequest, Star Trek Next Generation, and obviously with DS9 and Voyager, and what else?
Enterprise.
I don't know. Yeah, and all of these fantastic shows,
sure.
Like, you can't really they try so hard to make good shows, but in my eyes, the 90s and the 80s were the golden age of TV. And okay. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, go on.
Well, I was gonna say, I sympathize with that, because there is something about, I think the TV. So, like, Knight Rider was the very first show that I remember liking, mm-hmm. right? Like, that I got really into, and I was very, very young. But so, like, I think the TV that you grow up with will always kind of have that. It'll always be hard to beat, right?
Yeah. I guess it will be the same for our kids' generation, in a sense. Like, they will grow up with Discovery, Picard, and then obviously they will see all the new movies, and the old things will be just. Probably just has a novelty value to the things. Like how we. Sometimes I grudge on to the original series and Knight Rider and Sequest, but once I have kids, they will always say, like, oh yeah, that's your youth pause, like, and just forget it.
Well, and I think, you know, to bring that back to Star Trek, I think Star Trek is a great way, because you can see that in the shows, right?
Mm.
So in Next Generation era, right? When there's Relics, and then there's In a Mirror Darkly, right? Where they have to recreate the original series sets, mm-hmm. right? Or the original series Constitution class or whatever. And they do it exactly, right? They do it like they are so devoted to, because everybody working on Next Generation grew up with the original series, right? Yeah. Then you get to the Kurtzman era, right? And they feel they aren't as devoted to the original series. They didn't grow up with it. You know, it's something that their parents grew up with. And so there's a little more leeway. You know, they want to update it. They want to make it cool for, like, today, right? But when they go to recreate 10 Forward, right, it is recreated exactly. It is recreated, you know, lovingly, because that's what they grew up with. Mm-hmm. And so I think you'll always see that as, you know, if Star Trek goes another 50 years, the next generation that comes after the Kurtzman era will reimagine Next Generation, and they'll change everything, and, you know,
and who knows,
they
might reimagine Discovery and Picard as well at one point.
Right.
You never
exactly.
know. It's like,
exactly.
Oh, there was this show Discovery, let's just, you know, let's just mash up something from the very, very first one from Discovery and make something totally different.
Right.
Could be.
And so, but I think you can see, you know, you're how devoted you are to those kinds of things that you grew up with. Devoted is not the right word, but, like, certainly it holds a special place in your heart that, you know, that maybe older or newer shows find it difficult to compete with.
Mm-hmm. And you loving TNG, I think you come across with your work quite well. I mean, I think most of the artworks I've seen are Enterprise D, Romulan Warbirds, and
sure.
So when was the time when you wanted to start creating all of these artworks? Like, when you know that, oh, I want to draw Star Trek.
So, I've always kind of been drawn to drawing Star Trek. You know, it's just that I haven't really had the skill to do it the way that I want to do it until, you know, the last few years. It was probably like 4 or 5 years ago that I tried to paint the Enterprise E. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. the Enterprise D, which has always been my favorite. It's the one that I grew up with, like we were just talking about. So it's the one that like that's always been my Enterprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once I kind of got it into my head that like, hey, I painted this, it's not half bad. Like maybe I could do more. Mm-hmm. Part of it is that, you know, drawing anything that has that kind of symmetry is incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I started taking a lot of reference photos, and then using those reference photos quite liberally, that I kind of got the hang of drawing starships, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, one of the things that I've always loved about Star Trek and that my eye has always been drawn to is the starships, right? I can tell you registry numbers, I can tell you classes, like I know, you know, what the design specifications are for X, Y, or Z class, or, you know, the Galaxy class is different than the Nebula class, whatever. Like, it's just, for whatever reason, it's just like that kind of information has always clicked with my brain. Mm-hmm. And so when people mess it up, right, like when something is inaccurate about the way the Enterprise is drawn by someone else, like mm-hmm. my brain picks up on it immediately. And so it is something that, like, until I was able to create the kind of reference I needed, it was mm-hmm. incredibly challenging to get to the point where I was happy with it. So mm-hmm. Eagle Moss takes some of the credit mm-hmm. because I can finally, like, get a 3D model of this ship and light it the way that I want to light it, and then, mm-hmm. you know, take a photo of it and then use that photo for reference for my work. Mm-hmm. So that I can make sure that I get all of the details that would drive me nuts otherwise right.
So you're kind of correcting the Eagle Moss models while you're drawing them.
I wouldn't go that far, because the Eagle Moss models are, for the most part, remarably accurate.
I'm thinking about window alignment that usually used to be a bit of an issue. I mean, I know I watched quite a few videos of Damien's and then Chris's, and, yep. and they always mention the window alignment. Other than that, it's a beautiful series for sure. And I said that lovingly. So
yes, yeah, that has always been a trademark, right? A trademark creative choice, if we're being generous, of Eagle Moss. But having that said, having painted various starships, I can tell you that windows are a pain in the ass. I get really, really tired of painting windows. There are something like 3,000 windows on the Enterprise D. No, and no. So you get to the, like, and to be fair, like, when I paint the Enterprise, you don't see all the windows because you're only seeing part of the ship, right? But there's still, like, a lot of windows. And I know because I'm one of those people. I know if I mess up the windows, if I put the windows in the wrong place, like, someone's gonna notice. And I'll see this comment on Twitter that's like, hey, put the windows, like, where the lifeboats are supposed to be.
Where are there, like, 3 more windows in the right side? It's like, what the hell? You know, correct it right away. Make it so, number one.
Right? So, yeah. But thank goodness for them. Thank goodness for Eagle Moss, because they do help me get those. They help me get more details right mm-hmm. than I do any kind of correcting in my work.
Have you ever built models before? Models? Or just you have the Eagle Moss ones?
So, I did go through a phase, both as a child and as a middle-aged man, where I took up, you know, building the plastic models. Mm-hmm. Both times it took me 3 or 4 or 5 builds to admit to myself that I was no good at it. and having said that, like, there are some things that like the models today have that mm-hmm. You know, Aztec-ing decals and like painting guides and stuff like that, that we didn't have, you know, 20 years ago when I was starting out, or when I did this the first time. So yes, I have built them. They usually look like they don't look as good as I have never looked as good as I would like them to, and then they break. So the Eagle Moss models have been quite nice because like I don't have to futz with glue, I don't have to, and that's really like I never enjoyed the process of building the model ship. I just wanted the model of the Enterprise on my bookshelf, you know. So Eagle Moss comes around and they have these very accurate, very beautiful models, and it's like, all right, yeah, sign me up. I mean, I didn't actually sign up, but I would buy them occasionally because
yeah, it's 180 ships plus specials plus online specials plus
extra large models.
I think your wife probably would be like, okay, so like you have to choose either me or the ships. And you don't want to make that choice.
No. No, I do not. So we compromise. I get a shelf. I get a corner of the living room. You know, and she is like, she's great about that kind of thing. So there have been no spaceship arguments as of yet.
But, you know, whatever is coming late, it will coming at one point.
Right?
No. No, I'm just joking. I wonder, when I was in art school, I did this thing that in any occasion I went back to Star Trek in a sense to try to recreate something, and I remember drawing the painting the Enterprise D from the episode The Fistful of Data's. You know, there's a really nice shot at the end of the episode when the Enterprise flies over a planet and the sun just sets behind the planet. It's just a beautiful beautiful Western shot. So I recreated that. I think I drew a picture of Scotty, but I still don't know where did I put that. And I recreated Spot as well, the painting that Data made.
Nice.
I wonder how have you ever done anything like this during your years of being an artist?
So I don't think so. That was my thinking noise. I don't think so. Although I have been, so the closest, right, is the painting of the Enterprise D in Captain Picard's ready room. I have always loved that painting. And so when I am creating starship art, it's not that I am trying to recreate that painting exactly, but I'm always kind of inspired by the ready room painting, right? I want to like recreate that same vibe with whatever subject I happen to be painting, right? So like this could be something that a Romulan warbird commander has in his equivalent of a Romulan ready room. Like that's kind of the vibe that I often will try to capture. As far as like, you know, recreating a specific shot or a specific scene, not that I can think of. Although that doesn't stop people from seeing, you know, their favorite episode in X, Y, or Z painting. You know, I did. There are a couple of paintings that I've done where people will come up to it and be like, "Hey, that's from yesterday's Enterprise." Like, I mean, it's not, but like, it is awesome that you see that in it. You know, like so that will happen with some regularity, and I think it's just because, you know, like it's tapping into that same thing where like that reminds me of what I love about Star Trek.
And I didn't notice that you do do like experimenting as well, putting together the JJ Enterprise with the Doomsday Machine.
yes and so that is a painting that I like. I always had that in my head because I thought it would be a great if I were writing the next Kelvin timeline movie, you know, it would be the Doomsday Machine, just because I think it would be fantastic on that kind of big screen. So it was something that I always wanted to see. And so I thought, well, I'll just paint it. as people see it though, like the thing that, and this is just kind of like a natural tension in any artwork that is open to interpretation, right? Is that some people see it as a mistake, right? that painting in particular, because you're taking something from the Prime Universe, from Doomsday Machine, which is, you know, the planet killer, and then you're taking the Kelvin Enterprise and putting them together, and a lot of people look at that and they're like, well, you got the you use the wrong Enterprise. Clearly that is a mistake.
But that's the fun thing about it, right? It's just imagining how different things would look together. I mean, I would never imagine seeing an Intrepid class starship battling a Romulan Daedrix, and you made one picture of out of it, and it's beautiful. It looks amazing.
And thank you.
It makes you wonder, because we never seen the Voyager coming across with the Romulan Daedrix, even though it's an Intrepid class ship and it could have been in a battle with the Daedrix over the years.
Right. So yeah, and that is something that that always gets me excited for, like, a new painting, right? Like, this is something I always wanted to see. And so when I get that sense of, like, I've always wanted to see, you know, Voyager and a Dideridex, then it's fun to get to paint it. Like, that's just, you know, one of the joys of art. Because no one can tell me, like, I should say, like, no one can ever deny me the ability to, like, see that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's, you're basically creating the track that you wanted to see in a certain level.
Right. I think that's the joy of it.
I have to admit, there was a ship design that I wanted to create, and I think I still have some blueprints, and I'm air quoting blueprints because they were like really old, and I think I made something out of an NX and Sovereign, like I measured them together. It was a really fun design, but I when I seen it, I was like, no, this is not canon, you know, but my head was like, nah, this is not gonna happen in real life. And I tear it away. I torn the thingy apart, and it's like, okay, I'm just gonna chuck it away. I think a few hours later, I was like, what have I done? Like, you know, taped it back together, and I kept wondering, like, hey, okay, that maybe that's just in my head, but why wouldn't I, you know, just go for it and just try to imagine a lot of fan fiction. I think that's why comes alive, because, you know, they're missing something from, probably, I think, I'm just making up in my head, but something that they miss from the show, or they want to have this recreated or being part of the Star Trek universe. And Star Trek universe is big, and you know, having this art that you do as well, it's just, you know, enriching the experience.
Well, and that is exactly what I try to do with it, right? Is that, like, it should be adding to people's enjoyment, you know, adding to the richness of the universe. And that's kind of what I try to do with the art is, you know, like, if I want to see Voyager and a Warbird, you know, dogfighting, there's probably someone else out there that does too, and they're gonna love this. And so, like, I do always try to show everything in its best light, if that makes sense. Like, I don't, because I mean, and there is a place for all kinds of artwork, but, like, I do try to avoid any artwork that, like, that tears something down, you know, or that, you know, builds up my favorite show by tearing down someone else's favorite show, like that kind of a thing. So I do try to, just like with your blueprints, like, you know, there's somebody out there that would love to see that they love the NX-01, they love the Sovereign class, and they want to see those two things together, and, like, it resonates because you're sharing an enriched experience.
That's you put it better than I imagined in my head myself.
Maybe I should start a podcast.
Why not? So I think we arrived to a point in this podcast where we have a game that if you're not familiar with it, it's called Do Your Shat, is the Captain Kirk impression game.
I should have listened to an episode before I agreed to do this.
That's totally fine. I'm not gonna trouble you with too many things. If you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to. I mean, I don't have to do this. It's just if you want, and it's that easy. Space the Final Frontier in the voice of Captain Kirk.
Space the Final Frontier in the voice of Captain Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's I just said it.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we just take what it is. No, that's good. That's good. I know. It's. I am still thinking if I should keep this segment in the show. You know, I have put people into the pedestal before with this, and some people nailed it perfectly. Some people were like, you know, like, I'm sure if I would do that, and am I gonna rethink about this? But thank you very much for trying, though.
Well, you are very welcome. Impressions are... I think it's a good bit. You may as well keep it. Like, does it make people uncomfortable? Maybe, but...
It's for fun. I mean, it's
exactly.
Not... yeah, it's for fun. So I wanted to ask you something about the comic books that I've seen on your website. You have made, and we touched on regarding the Star Wars and Star Trek crossover comic book, The Enterprise E battling the Imperial fighter or something. I'm not familiar with Star Wars that much, so I remember
fair.
Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. That's it.
That's all you need.
About Star Wars, I refer to Star Trek episodes probably.
I get it.
So I wonder, I when I looked at the looked at those pages that you put on your website, how was the process making a comic book? I was curious about this because, you know, you have to tell a story with pictures mainly and some speech bubbles, but how can you convey the story using the images? And, you know, you have a set amount of blocks, space to actually create something, and, you know, putting together the idea how to, you know, I want to tell this story in like 5 pages, like what would be the process of that?
Sure. It's a challenge. So I think the first step is to read a lot of comic books to kind of help you understand the rhythms of, you know, this sort of panel by panel, page by page kind of storytelling. The process for me for that particular project was basically I wrote out a script.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of do a thumbnail of the panel layouts, you know, like this is the most important thing that happens on this page, so it gets the biggest panel. And then I'll kind of try to fit the rest of the panels around it so I can still tell the totality of the story on that page. And then I'll lay down some pencils, and then after the pencils, I'll put down the inks. It is, for me, it's one of those things where I try really hard to make sure that you can follow the story, mm-hmm. even if there aren't any speech bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that it reads better that way. That way the speech bubbles are adding to the richness of the story rather than, you know, helping you get from A to B. Mm-hmm. Although they do that too. And then cash with that. So it is a challenge. It is definitely a challenge to you know, convey all of that information through various panels. And to fit all of those panels on the page. Because that was a, you know, just my own little project, I did have the advantage of being like, well, these panels aren't all going to fit, so we're going to move this one to the next page.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or this page is really boring, we're going to throw a TIE fighter into the middle of it. You know? Mm-hmm. Like I had the advantage to be able to do that, whereas you know, if I were working on somebody else's script or using somebody else's ideas, that might not have been as feasible. But I think that, I mean, it all, like, and it is a very good exercise in visual storytelling. Like, I think that's kind of what it all comes down to is, because the panels are not isolated, right? I mean, how you structure the panels and how you, you know, which panels are bigger, which panels are smaller, how many panels on a page, like all of that affects the pace of how quickly you read it, how quickly events are happening. So it's all visual storytelling. And it is something that I try to, you know, every piece that I create, you know, even now, even when it's just one painting of the Enterprise in space, right? I'm still trying to accomplish that same thing of telling a story, you know, directing the eye, kind of setting a pace for the entire piece, whether it's a comic book page or, you know, a painting of a starship.
So it is almost like literally directing a bit of a scene, putting together the, like, what do you want to see on screen? That's what you put into paper, in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I did, like, it is probably, you know, gosh, when I was in college, I did direct several really terrible short films. And so,
I think we all did.
Yes, right?
Don't take all the credit.
That's fair. And so, but I think that ability to, like, it was good practice for kind of the art that I create today, because it's that same basic mechanism where you have to understand sort of what visually is going to tell your story.
Yeah, no, I agree. So in relation to Star Trek, and knowing that, and obviously I'm pretty sure you come across with Star Trek comic books.
I'm sorry?
I'm pretty sure you come across with Star Trek comic books in relation.
Yes, I have read one or two or ten Star Trek comic books, yes.
So would you say that you enjoy reading comic books, or you rather making them?
So there was a time where I would have rather been making them. These days, I think I more enjoy reading them. And that's just because they are a... This is going to sound like I'm lazy, but they are a tremendous amount of work.
No, I can imagine. I mean, it's just having painting one picture. I mean, talking about those windows in the Enterprise D.
Right. And it does... So, like, comics, unless you are working very, very slowly and very in-depth, don't give you the opportunity to really get into the detail and the texture and the... Because, you've got to get that page done and you've got to move on to the next one, right? And I really enjoy that part of the process where I get to... Like, as much as I complain about all of the windows and the lifeboats and the Aztec-ing, like, I do enjoy that. Like, I do enjoy getting that far into the details and being able to sort of render that and create that from, you know, a blank page. Like, that's a fun part of the process.
Oh, that's awesome. So will you gonna do any new ones? Are there any in development? Just to give us a peek.
any comics or any paintings?
Either. Both.
Okay. So there are no new comics in the works. But there are new paintings. So I've got... I am in the process of developing a painting of the Discovery-era Enterprise. So you can look for that one in probably a few weeks from now. And then I've got another one percolating of the Battlestar Galactica, which will be a fun one. Because it'll be totally different from, like, totally different vibe and style from the kind of Star Trek ships, just because it's a different show.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. So I wonder, and this is something that I usually ask from many of my guests, and I'm just curious, what do you, what your answer is. So when you, let's say you're drawing, because, you know, you're drawing.
most of my day.
You're drawing, totally, like, you're drawing a Doctor Who piece, and someone shouts, your wife shouts it from the background saying that, Star Trek. What is the first thing that comes to your mind?
The Enterprise.
For a moment, I thought you were going to say the Windows.
No. Although maybe they I do have nightmares sometimes. No, I don't actually, but I could. Maybe I will now. Nightmares of Windows. It's for whatever reason, more than any particular character or mm-hmm. episode, or like just the Enterprise itself, and in my brain, the Enterprise D is more sort of deeply associated with Star Trek than just about anything. Like that's where my brain goes.
So that's kind of part of your big warm blanket.
Yes, I would say. Yeah.
That's I will a very
wrap
big
myself
blanket.
Up. Yeah. Wrap myself up in a Galaxy class blanket. Warm blanket. Yes.
So I know you mentioned that basically the Enterprise D's and Next Generation is because that's what is really close to you. I just wonder why. What exactly was the, you know, that power behind the Enterprise D that captures you?
Sure. And it's going to be much more of an emotional answer than a rational answer. In that, I think at the time where I was sort of first watching Next Generation, I was probably middle school, which is just a hellacious period for anybody, right? Mm. And there's all kinds of, like, you know, whatever kind of nightmarish stuff is happening in your real life. The Enterprise, and in particular the Enterprise D, was always this place where people were kind. They behaved rationally and calmly and inclusively. The ship looked really comfortable, right? Like it looked like this place where you could just lie down on that bed or that couch, and that would be really comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I think it creates this cozy, safe environment where, like, you know, no matter what else is happening, like, I could kind of escape into that. And so I think that relationship has kind of, you know, like, stayed with me throughout my life, right? We're not so much like, you know, I'm as miserable as I was in middle school. But in that, you know, when I do have those moments where, like, the world is on fire, you know, like, I still go towards that sort of place of comfort. So I think it's just that it happened to, it's not that it's the best Star Trek or the most compelling Star Trek, although it is certainly very good. But I think it is, like, it was there for me when I needed it. And so, like, that's where I gravitate towards for that sort of comfort. That's where I get that feeling.
Have you ever felt the same with, because I know I can clearly see that TNG is close to your heart. Just wonder if you have ever felt the same with, you know, revisiting DS9 or Voyager and the Enterprise. Maybe the original series.
Right. So the original series, like, a little bit, but not as, just because, like, I think I digested more of the original series later in life. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't as core and fundamental. Mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine and Voyager, like, that whole Berman era, for all of its other faults, certainly had that same kind of overall kind of, like, comfortable feeling to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do get that same kind of, although not as potently, I do get that same feeling, like, from Deep Space Nine and Voyager. Mm-hmm. Voyager in particular, like, is a weird one because when it was on the air, I was like, this should be more like Battlestar Galactica. This should be, you know, like the Maquis and Starfleet should be at each other's throats. Like, Voyager should be in disrepair. They're 70,000 light years from the Federation. You know, it should be a lot darker. And now I'm like, oh, thank God it's none of those things. Because now I can watch it and, like, it's comforting and kind of, it's nice, right, that the ship is repaired after every episode. Like, because it still remains that sort of beacon of hope and progress, even, you know, even when they go through this, you know, when they're thrown halfway across the galaxy with no support, right? They're still able to keep the ship clean.
And yeah, that's a very beacon of hope. I like that. That's a very, very powerful thing that you just said there, because that's something that I realized with, especially with Voyager, because when I moved out from home to a totally different country, and it was hard at the beginning, you know, being far from home, and Voyager was kind of going back to me. And that was the first series I dived into, so that will always be in a special place in my heart, even though I love old Star Trek. But that helped a lot as well, and I always kind of was looking for the definition of why, but I think you just beautifully put it together that Voyager was a beacon of hope. That's fantastic. I think that's fantastic. I think on that note, that's a very nice place to finish off the podcast for sure. It's a very, very, very positive and uplifting note. But before we go away, tell us and tell my audience where they can find you, how they can find you, how they can contribute to your work, because this is awesome and you should get, you know, more followers.
Right, the more followers the better. So they can find me on Twitter. That's probably where I'm most active these days, at DJ Volts, V like in Victor, OLTZ 1701. At DJ Volts 1701 on Twitter. Otherwise, you can go to my website, which is danvoltsart.com, and you can find all of my social media, connections and et cetera there. You'll also find my online store where you could, you know, purchase a print to have your own ready room painting in your living room or bedroom or wherever you put your Star Trek artwork.
And you have a Patreon account as well, if anyone fancy to support you.
I do. You don't get any rewards for signing up for my Patreon. But you know, if you feel like throwing some Starship artwork up on your desktop wallpaper, you know, throw a couple bucks towards my Patreon, and it'll help me keep making Star Trek art, or awesome. Doctor Who art, or science fiction art, etc.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Dan, thank you very much for your time and for being in the show, and for
absolutely,
you know, sharing your story and getting into a deep dive into the art of Star Trek in a sense, and you know how everything talked about it. It was just it was good. It really helped me as well to understand a bit more and getting into a bit more to what you do, and obviously to understand a bit better of Star Trek itself.
Well, it was a pleasure. So thank you for having me on.
No, thank you very much for being on, and for my audience as well. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Warm Blanket Podcast. And until next time, live long and prosper. And that was it for this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it, and rest assured, new episodes will be coming out every week, where we sit down with a Trekkie to find out what makes us feel good about Star Trek and to discover what is our warm blanket made of. If you really enjoy listening to this podcast, please leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. It would really mean a lot to me. To find out more about this audio adventure, please visit trekkerprize.com/podcast, where you can also listen to the previous episodes. Thank you again for listening to yet another episode of the Warm Blanket Podcast, and I'll see you in the next episode. Live long and prosper.